Let's go ahead and
there's like when the PC commissioners can't dial in, right?
This is Sioux Falls. We're going to go ahead and take roll call and then begin the meeting. Do we have Doug Idol from Vantage Point Online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Doug. Mary Sisick from Swift Telephone.
Yes, and also with me is Ben Dickens.
Oh, hi, Ben. Jason Tott from Quest.
I am here.
Thank you. Karen Jessinga from Mid-American.
Yes, I'm on.
Did I get that right, Karen?
Close enough.
Thanks. Rich Helsper from Brookings Municipal Utilities.
I am here.
Thanks, Rich. Amy Koenig for Talos Zurich.
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks. Mark Benton from Mid-States. Mark, are you on the line?
I am.
Okay, thanks. Doug Furlick, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Great. We also have Chairman Sard joining us telephonically. Anybody else on the telephone line? All right. This is the meeting of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission on Tuesday, June 13th at 1:30 p.m. We're at the USVSU building in Sioux Falls. This is the time and place for the commission meeting. This is Vice Chairman Dusty Johnson. With me is Commissioner Hansen. And Chairman Bob Saar is joining us telephonically. With that, we'll begin the agenda of the commission meeting. First on the agenda, consumer reports, status report on consumer utility inquiries from Deb Gregg.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. The commission has received a total of 167 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 23, 2006 commission meeting. 30 of the contacts involved telecommunication services, 34 of the contacts involved electrical services, 15 contacts involved natural gas, 22 contacts involved cellular phone service, 48 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, and 18 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 963 of the 1,097 complaints received in 2006 have been resolved. 1,671 of the 1,885 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved.
Thanks very much, Ms. Gregg. Any questions for Ms. Gregg? Hearing none, we'll move along with the agenda. Thanks much, Deb. We're going to be skipping past CE06002 and moving on to the electricity portion of the docket. First up is EL05-023. This is in the matter of the application of Xcel Energy for a construction permit to build 9.6 miles of the Split Rock to Lakefield Junction 345 kV transmission line and add facilities to that substation. And the question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the construction permit? I believe that a joint stipulation was filed between staff and Xcel. Who will address the issue first?
Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to hit the button at the bottom there, Mr. Wilcox?
Just where it says touch. Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, my name is Jim Wilcox. I work for Xcel Energy. We had something come up in this issue that would cause us to ask this matter to be...
Does staff have anything to add?
Staff is in agreement with the deferral. Thank you.
Yeah. Any questions from commissioners on the deferral request?
No, sir.
Hearing none. Pardon? Hearing none, I will make a motion to defer this item.
Second. And I concur.
Motion carries. EL05023 has been deferred. Next is EL06-014 in the matter of a petition for electrical service by Dakota Vinyl Extrusions to have Northwestern assigned as its electric provider in the service area of Coddington-Clark Electric Cooperative. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant petitions for intervention to both Coddington-Clark and SDREA? The moving party would be Coddington-Clark and SDREA. Who will be speaking?
I will, Commissioner. This is Darla
okay.
Rogers. Good afternoon. We have filed petitions to intervene on behalf of Coddington Clark and also SDREA. We believe that this is a large load case. The proposed Dakota Vinyl Extrusions project is located within the assigned service area of Coddington Clark, so I believe it's very important that we have an interest in the outcome of this case. And because the issues are widespread and certainly affect all of the cooperatives and reason in the state of South Dakota. We believe that the petition for being of SDR is appropriate in this case. We have been a grant for petitions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rogers. Does anybody here on behalf of Northwestern or any other party to the matter?
I'm Brett Kennecke here on behalf of Northwestern.
We're going to pause for just a moment, Mr. Kennecke. We seem to be having some feedback.
What do we need to do? Is that keep my
Mr. Kennecke, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think that John Archer from Sioux Falls, attorney for Dakota Vinyl, might be in the room down there, but I would just like to point out the need on behalf of the of his client, Dakota Vinyl, to have a schedule set on this matter and have it heard so that his project can proceed in an orderly fashion. With that, I'll end my comments on the matter. Thank you.
Mr. Archer? That's fine by me. Any problems? Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioners. My name is John Archer. I'm with the law firm of Hagen Wilk and Archer. I'm here this afternoon representing Dakota Vinyl Extrusions. Actually, Jay Morris and Jeff Decker. And I understand that...
Jay, if you do want to hold on for just a second, Mr. Archer's addressing this issue.
Certainly. Sorry about that. Okay. And we're here today to... Actually, asked that the petition to intervene be denied because we feel that we have tried to work for a certain period of time with Coddington Electric, and it appears through the process that even looking at their petition that they think this project isn't going to work. We've had hours of discussions with them, working with them, And frankly, it's been a situation where we felt like they have not treated us in a professional manner. But be that as it may, I know that this commission rarely denies a petition to intervene, and I appreciate that. But this project has been ongoing for approximately 4 years. I've been involved in it for 3 years. We have secured funding through the governor's office. We've worked very hard with the local community. We've done a public offering. We've raised over $700,000 for this project where they build a building. We're at the point right now filing a public offering to raise the rest of the proceeds on behalf of the operating company. And to follow up Brett's comments, a long delay in this process will seriously damage our company and our ability to get this project going. And so I would ask that the commission set a date as quickly as possible to have a hearing on this matter and have it resolved as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Mr. Morris, I know you spoke up earlier. Did you have something to add?
No, just basically the concur with Mr. Archer's comment.
Does staff have anything?
Yes, staff would recommend granting intervention. Certainly, Coddington Clark has a vested interest in this that is in their territory, as well as SDREA does set forth a number of reasons why they should be granted intervention.
Ms. Kramer, Commissioner Johnson here. What weight did you give concerns by Mr. Archer's clients about a delay in allowing interveners at this point?
Well, there has been nothing done, so there can be no delay. I consider it more to be a due process issue. They are entitled to ask questions and to move forward with a data request, discovery, and whatnot. We'll get them on the calendar as quickly as possible.
Okay, thank you. Questions from other commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, could someone from staff give me an idea of what the time schedule would be on this, and additionally, what duration the commission is required to act on this?
I don't believe there's any deadlines. It's not like 30-day or anything like that, your Arlington complaint, which was, I believe, 15 days. I'm trying to remember, and Darla, maybe you remember with the turkey growers. That really wasn't a very long, I would say within 4 months, just by the time you do discover, each party gets 30 days to respond. Right there, you're looking at 60 days. You hold your hearing, you brief it. I have no idea what the commission's calendar looks like the next few months, but I do know it's quite crowded at this point.
Thank you.
Other questions from commissioners? Yeah, Mr. Smith, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just note that the way we normally handle these things is once we've passed the intervention deadline and we've solved the issue of who's in the case, normally what we do is we have a scheduling conference chaired by myself, and then we attempt to get to the bottom of, you know, what your real time frame needs are, and we do our best to accommodate a schedule that will not harm any of the parties, and I think that's what we probably should do in this case. You know, if the commission wishes to, if there are any particular time constraints here, you might want to make those known, and by all means, commission, if you want to direct us to expedite this, we'll do our best to do so. Again, keeping in mind the need for discovery and due process. And also, you know, another just a practical matter is you guys are in charge really in the end of your own calendar. And the commissioners are the only people that can really free up time on that calendar. And so that weighs into it too for us. Thank you.
My wife makes it known quite often how difficult I am to work with, so I'm glad to hear that you share her view, Mr. Smith. Other comments or questions from commissioners? And to the extent that staff or Mr. Smith are looking for direction, and I'm certainly not immune to arguments about how delay can hurt economic development. The development's my background, so I'm sure I would agree with all of the commissioners that certainly expeditious handling of this matter would be important. If there's nothing else from any other commissioners or any of the parties, I would make a motion to grant intervention to Coddington Clark and SDREA.
Second.
Concur.
Motion passes. We'll move on to EL06015 in the matter of the joint request for an electric service rights exception between Northwestern and Bonham-Yankton Electric Association. Question for the commission today is, shall the commission grant the joint request for an electric service rights exception? And who will be handling this matter first? We have Northwestern or Bonham-Yankton, or will staff?
Staff would look to Northwestern for any comments first.
Mr. Morris, anybody else with Northwestern? Any comments?
Yes, this is Jeff Decker, and we're in agreement with this petition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Decker. Ms. Greff, Mr. Jacobson, Mr. Bettman, anything else to add?
I think Martin's going to handle this. This is Martin Bettman. On May 18th, Northwestern Energy and Bonham-Yankton filed a request for exception to the electric service territory agreement. Under the proposed agreement, Bonham-Yankton will be allowed to serve a three-phase electric service to an irrigation well in Northwestern's assigned service area in the northwest quarter of Section 1, Township 95 North, Range 58 West in Bonham County. Bonham-Yankton would be allowed to serve the irrigation well as long as the well is used to irrigate that quarter section of land. When the well is no longer used for irrigation purposes, all rights granted would be terminated. The owner of the well initiated the request for service by Bonham-Yankton because of the cost factor involved if service were to be provided by Northwestern. Staff recommends approval of the proposed agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Bettman. Anything else from anyone? Comments or questions by commissioners? Any commission action?
Move for approval.
Second?
And I concur.
Motion carries. Moving to the one call portion of the docket. OC05-005 in the matter of the complaint filed by MDU, Rapid City, South Dakota, against Vince Finkhouse, doing business as Eagle Excavating in Rapid City. And the question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant staff permission to get a civil judgment against Finkhouse in circuit court pursuant to SDCL 49-7A-28? Ms. Graff?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. According to statute, SDCL 49-7A-28, the One Call Board needs permission from the commission in order to go pursue a civil judgment against anyone in civil court. We have a docket OC05-005 in which the One Call Board has levied a total of $6,500 penalty. They have not been able to collect that penalty as of to date and would like to go proceed a civil judgment against Mr. Finkhouse. I have Larry Inglers from the One Call Board here with me. I got permission from the One Call Board at their last board meeting, which was last week in Custer, South Dakota, and they have given me permission to go, indeed, in fact, pursue the civil judgment, and so I guess we just request that the commission grant me permission to go get it as well.
Are there any dissenting voices at the One Call Board, Ms. Graff?
No, there wasn't. They were all in agreement of going after Mr. Finkhouse to get the judgment.
Dad?
Nothing other than to your last point. We find it very important, since this is the first case of this nature that we've had, that the board itself follow through with the statute they passed to the ultimate end. So that's why we're requesting your approval.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like someone's training some whales. I'm curious if you have your microphones on, or if you have your telephones turned on, if you would please turn them off. We get a little bit of feedback, and thank you very much. It's ended now, so we hope that it will remain that way. A little difficult to hear what Larry's having to say. Thank you.
Ms. Greff, are there significant costs associated with pursuing a civil judgment?
More so than staff time, and which my time is billed to the board, and filing fees and stuff like that. So no, not a significant
minimal.
And the board was okay with those minimal costs going forward.
Chairman Saar, any questions?
Yeah, well, as much as anything, I think a comment. I want to thank staff and the One Call Board for working on this issue, and I know the PUC was involved in modifying the legislation to beef up the penalties. I mean, this is precisely the reason why we wanted to do it, to go after the bad violators who, unfortunately, kind of give a bad name for everybody out there, and I think they're few and far between. But in a situation like this, I think it's well worth the staff time and to go after people like this, because these bad offenders clearly, you know, endanger themselves, property, and the public. So by all means, I think it's a great idea.
Well said. Anything else by commissioners, staff? Commission action?
Move for approval according to staff recommendations.
I'll second the motion to allow staff to get a civil judgment against Finkhouse.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Moving on to the telecommunications docket. Number one, in the matter of the filing for approval of amendments to agreements in dockets TC06-08-019-029-044, the question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendments to the agreements in the above referenced dockets? Do you have anything to add, Jason Pott from Quest?
No, I don't think so. I think these are pretty straightforward.
Fair enough. For staff, Ms. Graff?
Thank you. Mr. Topp was correct. They are all pretty straightforward. The amendments all have been properly filed with the commission. They contain no discriminatory language. No comments were filed in the comment period, and staff would recommend approval.
Any commissioner comments or questions? With that, I'll move that the commission approve the amendments to the agreements in the above-referenced dockets.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Telecommunications 2, in the matter of the filing for approval of agreements in dockets TC06-018-028-045-050-051. The question for the commission is, shall the commission grant a certificate of authority? I'm sorry. Question is, shall the commission approve the agreements in the above referenced dockets? Staff, Ms. Graff?
I would look to Mr. Topp if he has any comments first.
Mr. Topp? Mr. Tott, anything on telecommunications item number two?
I'm sorry, I was talking into the mute button. I'm not aware of any issues associated with these filings, and so I'm available to answer questions.
Wonderful. Thank you. Ms. Graff?
Again, these are pretty straightforward as well. They were properly filed. They've been reviewed. They contain no discriminatory language. There are no comments filed in the comment period, and we would recommend approval.
Any commission, thank you very much. Any commissioner comments or questions? Any commission action?
Move for approval.
Second.
And I concur.
The motion carries on to telecommunications 3, TC06-027, in the matter of the application of WiMAX Communications Corp. for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. And the question before the commission is, shall the commission grant the COA? Is anybody from WiMAX on the line or in person? Seeing none, Mr. Knadel, Mr. Lusk, Ms. Kramer from staff.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. This is Phil Lusk with staff. WiMAX Communications Corp., WiMAX did file an application seeking a COA to provide local exchange services using a combination of either unbundled network elements or resold services within Quest Corporation, South Dakota service territory. WiMAX indicated in their application it may eventually provide local services via its own switching facilities. The applicant requested a waiver from filing current financial statements under ARSD 2010-3203-11. Also, the applicant has agreed not to offer any prepaid services, including prepaid calling cards, and not to accept or to require any advance payments or deposits without prior approval of the commission. Therefore, staff recommends approval, subject to rural safeguards and restrictions, from offering prepaid services, including calling cards, and accepting or requiring any deposits or advance payments without the prior approval of the commission. Staff further recommends a waiver of ASRD 2010-3203-11.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lusk. I noticed that it was mentioned that WiMAX may eventually provide local services via its own switching facilities. If that's the case in the future, is any commission action required, further filing by WiMAX?
It is believed not, sir.
Would there be any effect noticeable to a consumer, a customer, if they changed the way that they do their switching and use their own facilities?
That question was not answered, and I do not have an answer. I apologize.
Mr. Knadel, Ms. Kramer, any idea from past dockets? I mean, I can't imagine there'd be a real effect on the customer, but I'm not a telecommunications expert either, so...
I don't believe there should be. You're going to use state-of-the-art facilities when they put those in, so the customer shouldn't know it's any difference.
Thanks. Any commissioner comments or questions? Hearing none, open to commission action. I will move that the commission grant the COA to WiMAX Communications based on the conditions, terms, and waivers recommended by staff.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Telecommunications item 4, in the matter of TC06-034, in the matter of the application of Nationwide Long Distance Service Incorporated for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services in South Dakota. Question for the commission is, shall the commission grant the COA to Nationwide Long Distance Service Incorporated? Is anyone from Nationwide Long Distance Service on the line? Staff, Mr. Solem, Ms. Graff.
Mr. Solem.
This is Nathan Solem. The applicant intends to provide direct and dial-around services, toll-free calling, directory assistance, data services, and postpaid calling card services. They have requested a waiver from filing a cash flow statement as required by ARSD 2010-2402, paren 8, They've also agreed to restrictions from offering any prepaid services and from collecting customer deposits or advance payments. The applicant has met the requirements for the granting of a certificate of authority. Therefore, staff recommends the commission grant the waiver request and issue Nationwide Long Distance Service Incorporated an inter-exchange certificate of authority subject to restrictions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Solem. Anything additional by staff or petitioner? Any commission questions or comments? Commission action.
I move that the commission grant the COA to Nationwide Long Distance Service Incorporated according to the stipulations as recommended by staff.
I'll second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. I'm going to pause at this moment and at the request of staff ask that folks at Pier, you know, Steve or Tina, if you could make sure that you record everybody that is present there. So we have that as an official record. And also, do we have anyone at the Mitchell RDTN Center participating at that location? Okay. How about Rapid City? All right. And we know who's... I'm sorry, go ahead. All right. Thank you very much. We will move on to Telecommunications 5 in the matter of the application for Mid-State Telecom Incorporated for approval to offer a different local calling area. And the question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant intervention to Quest? Quest is the moving party. Mr. Tott?
Thank you. This is an application to offer a calling area that's broader than Quest calling area and certain areas of the state, and that request could potentially have some impact on our network, and so we have asked to intervene in that proceeding and participate.
And for Mid-State, Mark Benton, would you like to address the intervention request?
I would defer to our attorney, Darla Rogers.
Sure. Ms. Rogers?
Yes, thank you. On behalf of Mid-State Telecom, we do not object to the intervention of Quest in this docket.
Fair enough. Staff, anything to add, Ms. Kramer?
Staff would recommend approval of or granting of the intervention.
Thanks, Ms. Kramer. Any commission questions or comments? Hearing none, I will move that the commission grant intervention request.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Telecom 6, in the matter of a petition for arbitration of interconnection agreements in dockets TC06-036, 037, 038, 039, 040, 041, and 042. Question before the commission is, shall the commission grant intervention to SDTA in the above referenced dockets? I understand there may be a preliminary motion or request.
Staff looked at Mr. Coit from SDTA to handle this matter.
Mr. Coit?
Yes, thank you. This is Richard Coit with South Dakota Telecommunications Association. I had a discussion with Talbot Wazorek, who's representing Alltel in this matter, yesterday, and we would like this to be deferred. We are having some discussions concerning the scope of the intervention, more specifically how we might actually participate in the proceedings, whether we call witnesses, whether we just intervene for purposes of cross-examination and oral argument. So to have further discussions along that line, we would ask the commission to defer the request.
Thank you, Mr. Coit. Does staff have any objection to the request to defer?
Staff has no issues with the deferral.
Okay. Thanks, Ms. Greff. Any commission comments or questions? Commission action?
Move to defer.
Second.
Concur.
Telecom 6 has been deferred. Telecom 7. in the matter of the application of MCC Telephony of the Midwest, doing business as Mediacom, for a COA to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. The question before the commission is, shall it grant intervention to Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business as Swiftel? Someone from Swiftel on the line, Mary and Ben?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner. Swiftel has requested intervention, although it appears from the petition that the request at this time for certification is restricted to non-rural areas of South Dakota. It's our understanding that there will be a subsequent petition for the rural service areas, including Swiftel service area. And in light of the fact that the commission's rules essentially request almost all of the same information for an application in a non-rural and a rural area, we believe that by ruling on the current application, that will set precedent, which would impact Swiftel's ability to challenge any such information in a subsequent petition. In addition, the petition contains a reservation of right concerning the South Dakota Commission's jurisdiction, and we don't know at this point how that's going to be pursued in this case, but of course any decision by the Commission concerning its jurisdiction over Mediacom and their provision of service or the request for a certificate would affect Swiftel. And as a result, we request intervention.
Thank you very much. Anyone from Mediacom have anything to offer?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dave Gertis. I'm a lawyer from Peer, and I appear for and represent MCC Telephony of the Midwest, doing business as Mediacom. I have talked to Mr. Helsper about this. It is not the intent of the applicant to apply for authority to do business in Swiftel's service area. The petition is simply, as many petitions this commission has handled in the past, the petition is simply to have authority to provide service in the Quest area and to provide interstate, long-distance telecommunications to and from the Quest areas. We object to the intervention because it's there's no basis for Brookings to have any interest in MCC's intervention in the Quest areas. I will tell the Commission that there is an intent on the part of MCC to make further, to file further petitions to enter rural areas and also including Swiftel's area, and that will be coming. But the fact that MCC may or may not file those petitions, I mean, the final decision hasn't been made, although there's been talk about doing it. The fact that the MCC may or may not file those petitions certainly doesn't offer any basis or standing for Swiftel to intervene in this petition. And it's quite frankly without precedent. I can't recall a time when another telecommunication company intervened in a petition to provide service in the Quest areas, but for Swiftel's information, we do in fact at this point plan to file a later petition that would involve Swiftel.
Thank you much, Mr. Gertis. Ms. Graff, staff opinion?
While staff agrees with Mr. Gertis that Brookings Swiftel or Swiftel's intervention in the later filed filings would probably be more adequate. They have no objection to them entering this this action right now.
Commissioner, comments and questions, Mr. Gertis. I have one. Should the commission give no weight to Swiftel's argument that a commission order in this instance may provide precedent for future Mediacom filings?
I cannot see where it would provide any precedent at all because there's an entirely different evidentiary standard for entering a rural service area. As the commission knows, we have to prove public interest and a bunch of other things that we don't have to prove going into the Quest areas. So if anything, I would say that entering the west areas would provide less precedential effect than, for instance, Swiftel intervening in some other RLEC application that MCC might make. I mean, that would make more sense, but here we're talking about just Quest, and I don't see where that provides any precedential value at all.
Thank you. Mr. Curtis.
Does Swiftel have anything to say?
Swiftel, do you have any response to the comments of Ms. Graff or Mr. Curtis?
Well, if I understood, staff did not object to our intervention. Is that correct?
Ms. Graff, do you want to?
Well, we don't have any objection to them entering as a party in this matter. We would certainly say that their presence would probably be better suited in the subsequent filings by MCC, albeit than this one.
Okay. So we agree with staff's first comment that to not object to our intervention. With respect to Mr. Gerdes's comment, there is one aspect of the Commission's rules which is unique to rural areas, and, of course, for the Quest for providing or for an application for a certificate of authority for the Quest areas, Mediacom did not have to comply with that one aspect of the rule. However, all of the other information which Mediacom is required to provide to demonstrate their technical, financial, and managerial capabilities is essentially the same, or it is the same. So any findings that the Commission makes on those aspects of the Mediacom application, it would seem to me, would most definitely serve as precedent when they turn around and file the exact same information to provide service in Swiftel's area.
Mr. Chairman, if I may have a short rebuttal.
Yes, Mr.
Chairman. I don't want to prolong this, but I would argue that if they want the information that's on the website, they don't have to intervene to get the web information. If they have some other agenda, then I think they should state it. Again, we're not applying, or MCC is not applying to enter the Swiftel area, and we would submit that there's no basis for them to intervene.
We'll move on to other commissioner commission advisor questions. Swiftel, you're the moving party. Any final response on this issue before we move to other questions?
Well, I guess my only final response is to also again repeat that in addition to the aspects of the application which we believe are deficient, we are also extremely troubled by the reservation of rights in the petition, and of course we have no idea how Mediacom attempts to pursue that or what the Commission may ultimately do, but any decision by this Commission concerning its jurisdiction over Mediacom would of course impact all local exchange carriers in South Dakota, including Swiftel.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Gerdes, would it be your position that there is no res judicata effect of the Commission's issuance of a certificate of authority in this case? Excuse me, I'm tongue-tied.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. That's what I was trying to say, yes. I agree. There would be no res judicata effect. There are two different standards we're dealing with.
Ms. Weiss, Mr. Smith, any other comments or guidance for the Commission before we take action?
Well, as to the jurisdiction issue, if I understand Mr. Gerdes, the petition as I read it at least, although the company states a reservation of rights with respect to jurisdiction by making this application, is it not a fact that it is at least voluntarily submitting for this purpose to our authority?
That's correct, Mr. Smith. We are, or MCC is submitting itself to the Commission's jurisdiction. The reservation of rights, if you read it, has to do with rights that it might have under the Telecom Act, and that it does not relinquish any of those rights, which I think goes without saying, quite frankly. But so that would be our position.
Thank you.
Mr. Ruslov, Ms. Wiest, anybody else have anything to offer? We're open for commission action. I I will move, Commissioner Johnson, I will move that the commission deny intervention to Brookings Municipal Utilities doing business at Swiftel.
I second.
And I concur.
The motion to grant intervention is denied. Telecom 8, TC06-047, in the matter of the application of a Venture Communications Technology, LLC, for a certificate of authority to provide local exchange services in South Dakota. And I believe there's been an amended question on this item. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We need to look at what was served on the service list as second addendum to the agenda of commission meeting.
And would you read the question before the commission, Mr. Smith?
The revised question, and what it does is it includes all of the interviews that had filed. The original question left two of them off. The question, as stated on the second addendum, is today shall the commission grant intervention to South Dakota Telecommunications Association, Alliance Communications Cooperative Inc., Jefferson Telephone Company, Vivian Telephone Company, and Prairie Wave Communications.
Counsel for the moving parties, anyone want to address this issue?
I can. This is Richard Coit in Pier. And on behalf of SDTA and the intervention petition that they filed, I would offer just some brief comment. As you can tell from the application that's been filed, there are four rural telephone companies that are members of SDTA that are affected by this filing. That would be Alliance Communications Cooperative, Jefferson Telephone Company, Vivian Telephone Company, and also Prairie Wave Community Telephone. We are asking for intervention not only based on their interest, them being members of the association, but also based on the interest of the rest of our rural telephone company members. This application will require this commission to look at rural safeguard issues, that being the case, we feel that it's important as an association that we have the ability to provide some input. And with that, unless there are any questions, I would stand on the written petition that we have filed. Thank you.
Mr. Quitt, are you representing all parties requesting intervention?
Well, I know that several of them have already filed a request for intervention under the commission rules that basically require an abbreviated petition by carriers that are incumbent LECs. Because they're the incumbent companies operating in those areas, it's very obvious that they have an interest in the process and they should be entitled to intervene. So I guess I can say that much for them. I'm not sure if any of them have their own attorneys or representatives on the phone.
Commissioner Johnson, Meredith Moore appearing for Ryan Taylor on behalf of Alliance Communications in this matter. We would echo Mr. Coit's comments and also indicate that in this case, Venture has requested a certificate of authority in specifically the Alcester exchange of Alliance Communications, in which Alliance is the incumbent local exchange carrier. And because of the potential impact upon Alliance's business interests as well as its service area, we would request intervention. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Moore. Any other counsel for those requesting intervention today? Hearing none, we have Doug Furlick on the line for Accenture or Venture. Mr. Furlick?
Your Honor, Venture has no objection to the commission granting intervention of any of the parties that have requested it. I would like to note, however, that none of the companies that have been served with a bona fide request for interconnection have responded to our BFR at this point, with the exception of Prairie Wave.
Thank you very much. Any comments from staff on this issue? Ms. Greff, Mr. Lusk, Mr. Best?
Staff would recommend granting of intervention to all parties.
Thank you very much. Any commissioner comments or questions? Hearing none, we'll move to commission action.
Move to grant intervention to all parties.
Second.
And I concur.
Motion carries. Telecommunications 9, TC06-048. in the matter of the filing by Interstate Telecommunications Cooperative for an extension of deadline for filing of its 2006 cost study. And continuing the theme of the day of intervention, the question before the Commission is, shall the Commission grant intervention to any party that may have filed, and shall the Commission grant ITC's request for an extension for filing its 2006 cost study? And who would like to address the matter first? ITC?
Commissioner Johnson, this is Darla Rogers, and I have filed the petitions on behalf of ITC and also in the next docket on behalf of West River Cooperative. These two, as you are aware, under the current switched access cost study rules, companies are required to file cost studies every 3 years. Both of these companies, ITC and West River Co-op, filed in 2003, and so under the rules, they would be required to file a new cost study by June 30th of 2006, and that's the deadline also established by the rules. As I indicated in our petition, there are a lot of issues surrounding our current switched access cost studies. This commission has a rulemaking docket open at the present time. There's also the intercarrier compensation action going on at the FCC. The 2004 and 2005 cost study dockets of the carriers of several of the LECs have not yet been approved, and in fact, there are currently negotiations going on among staff and the interveners and the LECs on the 2005 cost study dockets in an attempt to try to settle all or some of those issues. And for that reason, these two petitioners are requesting an extension of the deadline to file a cost study. We're asking for an additional 6 months if we file a study for the year of 2005, which is the historical period. We need to file it under the current rules by the end of June. We don't think that we're going to have resolution of a lot of these issues by that time, and therefore we would request a six-month extension. By the end of 2006, we believe that we will know clearly whether it would be best for the companies to proceed or whether we will have some type of settlement in place or whether there will be some changes in the rules. So that is the reason for the request for extension for both ITC and we get to the next stop at Westbrook Cooperative.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. Anyone else wish to speak to Telecommunications 9 or perhaps Telecommunications 10 as well? Does staff have any commentary? Mr. Sanger, Ms. Kramer?
This is Keith Sanger from Commission staff. There are no interveners in this case. None have been filed, so that question is moot. But staff would support the petitions and recommend that the commission approve the waiver.
Thank you, Mr. Sanger. Any commissioner questions or comments? Anything from advisors? Commission action, and I will move that the commission grant ITC Cooperative's request for an extension for filing in its 2006 cost study in docket TC06-048. And that the Commission grant West River Cooperative Telephone Company's request for an extension for filing its 2006 cost study in docket TC06-049.
I'll second.
And I concur.
Telecommunications 9 and 10 pass. On to administration. The consideration of amendments to the Commission's procedural rules to implement electronic filing and update complaint procedures and other procedural rules. This question has, the question before the Commission has also been amended. I know the Commission is being asked whether or not to open a docket and accept comments on how to proceed with its consideration of electronic filing, and I believe complaint procedure and other administrative procedure is would also be examined by that rulemaking docket. Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The current group of commissioners has been very progressive, I think, and innovative in its approach to the procedures of the commission, and has instituted several initiatives designed to both streamline and modernize procedures, and particularly has introduced electronic or the internet and a very effective internet website as part of our presentations of information to the public. In some recent cases, namely Big Stone, we have, on a limited basis where we can do so because it's in a particular case, instituted at least limited e-filing, and it's worked very well. And of late, the executive director has undertaken an initiative to go a step further and to formalize the R rules and e-filing process with respect to all matters before the commission. We primarily are requesting to open that docket for that purpose. There are certain other procedural rules that we think might deserve addressing at this time. Some of those have come about as a result of conversations between myself and other commission attorneys and outside counsel, among them Mr. Gerdes being one, and various other counsel, Mr. Wysorek, the various people that are always in front of us. For example, about whether our complaint procedure should be clarified so that we follow something more akin to the civil rules with respect to at least intercarrier complaints. I mean, you know, we're not doing that here today, but it's at least an issue that's come up, and I think it's one we'd like to discuss, whether we should have maybe separate tracks for those things. A few little things I know we've looked at, amending the rule related to the findings of proposed filing of proposed findings and conclusions, and perhaps a rule that would create a default procedural mechanism to the civil rules in cases where the civil rules would be applicable as a guide, and where we do not have a procedural rule that's in conflict with the civil rules. And that's basically the initial set of things we've kind of batted around, and with that I would request that the commission open a docket so we can bring in all of the various interested parties and find out what their ideas are.
Mr. Smith, does it make sense to have all of these possible changes lumped into one rulemaking docket?
I think it does, actually. I think it does in that one of the problems we face is inertia, for one thing. And since we're doing it anyway, a lot of the problems or the difficulty with rulemaking is just a very complicated sometimes lengthy set of procedural hoops you've got to jump through. And although it may attract a little more attention perhaps from the review committee or something like that, I don't know. But I guess my feeling is if we're going to jump into this and do it, it won't probably take appreciably longer nor more effort to take a look at the whole thing than to do just the e-filing part. Frankly, I think the e-filing part will be by far the most difficult set of decisions and the most difficult drafting job.
Thanks, Mr. Smith. Does any other person or party want to address whether or not the commission should open up this rulemaking document? Mr. Gerdes?
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, very briefly, I thought for a long time that something like this was necessary, and just let me give you a few for instances. A while back, I filed an application. One of the exhibits was a 10-K that was 97 pages long. Now, the rules call for an original and 10 copies, and, of course, that's a huge mountain of paper. I called one of the members of staff, and they said, well, just give us one copy of the thing and give us an electronic copy of the rest, because everybody else just wants an electronic copy. Nobody wants the paper copy. So that's what I ended up doing, even though it's not consistent with the rules. And I think there has to be some flexibility, and so we can use electronic filing in a lot of different ways, and that's just one example. The other thing I've thought for a long time is that the commission's rules on discovery need to be clarified and perhaps tracked more to the rules of civil procedure. They're a little bit vague the way they're stated right now. And then thirdly, there's, of course, issues like motion practice, I think, could be clarified too. So this could be a good vehicle to do a lot of that.
Thanks, Mr. Gerdes. Mr. Smith had noted that the Commission has tried to be progressive with the way it deals with information. I would just briefly mention that I think my colleagues have really been leading the charge on this. Gary has really started last year in talking about how we could make the office and the people we serve, we could serve them a lot more efficiently by going as close to paperless as possible. And Bob has really worked hard to get more and better information on our internet, on our website, and staff have really done a good job on all of those fronts. So thank you to everyone. Other persons or parties wishing to address? Yes.
Yes, this is Chairman Saar.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I didn't know if I had the floor. Thank you. You know, I appreciate the compliment, and I'd give the same one to you as well, but I do think we should really note. I mean, Commissioner Hampson has made this a big issue for him, and he's did a lot of the hard work and encouragement. And I don't know if the National Arbor Day Committee does awards to PUC commissioners, but he certainly has done something that's really going to save a lot of paper and make the commission much more efficient and friendly, whether you're a utility or just someone curious about what's going on in our offices. So I think it's really Commissioner Hampson deserves the credit, and I know you and I support him on it, but he's done the heavy lifting along with staff on this.
Any other persons or parties for Commissioner Hampson?
I am compelled to speak. After receiving the compliments from both of you, I appreciate it very much. And obviously, the three of us, you can't do anything without very good staff helping you along the process. My focus was very much along the line of paper when I first saw this, because when I was elected 3 years ago, I walked into the office and I saw the amount of paper that was there, and I said, oh my God, do I have to read all this, and how fast do I have to get through it? Absolutely. There were over six boxes. If you take the boxes that we receive paper in for copiers, there were six of those boxes filled with paper, and that was just on one case that we had before us. And then I had two, of course, files to the side that were filled with paper as well. And I started thinking, okay, we have to have 10 of these copied for us. And everybody uses computer. So I sent out an email asking folks to reply, and it was quite interesting to see how few people looked at the paper. They occasionally took some with them, but when they needed to do that, they could print it quite easily. I was just very happy how quickly everybody jumped together here, and it wasn't much more than a mention from my standpoint that I felt that I offered here, but everyone was quite interested in pursuing it. So congratulations to everybody. I know we will save several trees every year just from this alone.
If there are no further comments, we'll move toward commission action. Hearing no other comments, Commissioner Hansen, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you. I don't know whether to call you chairman or, excuse me, John was showing me something. This is the correct one as opposed to this one. I move that today the commission open a docket and accept comments on how to proceed with its consideration of electronic filing, the commission's complaint procedures, and other procedural rules.
Second.
And I concur.
I know we have yet to go to handle the consumer complaint docket item. I know we had an addendum and a second addendum. Are there any other items to deal with on post-normal agenda?
I don't think so. Those were finally roping up all those interventions that we sort of missed in three successive tries at it.
Well, thank you. With that, we'll proceed to the main event. And under consumer complaints, CE06-002, in the manner of the complaint filed by Sioux Valley Southwestern Electric Cooperative, doing business as Sioux Valley Energy, against Northern States Power Company, doing business as Xcel Energy, regarding provision of electric service to Merle and Roy's Paving. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission grant the motion to dismiss? And I believe the motion to dismiss was made by Xcel, and is the moving party. Xcel has the floor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, my name is Dave Gerdes. I'm a lawyer from Pier, and I represent Xcel Energy in this matter. Is it agreeable with the commission if I speak from here as opposed to coming closer?
That would be fine.
Excel has made a motion to dismiss the complaint on the basis that it fails to state a claim upon which relief can be granted as a matter of law. That is, we're saying that the law simply does not contemplate the relief which Sioux Valley is asking for in its complaint. When this first came up, just by way of background, when I opened my file, I entitled it Merlin Roy Revisited, because, of course, it all stems from the Merlin Roy case, which is a 1992 case decided by this commission, which went up to the South Dakota Supreme Court, and which this commission's decision was affirmed in. And the question was, it was a kind of a unique situation, but and I won't bore the commission because I'm sure you're familiar with the facts, but there's a quarry that is in both service territories, Sioux Valley's and Excel's. Excel's is the northern half of a quarter section, and Excel's is the northern half of a quarter section, and Sioux Valley's is the southern half of the quarter section. This commission ruled that in 1990, or before the 1992 Supreme Court decision, that Sioux Valley could not deliver electricity into then NSP, now Excel's territory, through a private line that was constructed by Merlin Roy. And they ruled that under the majority load test, that in fact the load that was coming in was that of north of Excel's, and that Excel should provide service to that location. Now, I want to talk about the words location, and I want to talk about the concept of retained right. Those are both concepts that have come up in cases of the South Dakota Supreme Court since the first Merle and Roy case. You'll note that in the Merle and Roy case, the South Dakota Supreme Court says this: we feel constrained to point out that what we have not held. This decision does not hold that the majority load test, the MLT test they call it, is required in every contested territorial case. PUC may conclude under a different set of facts that a different test, such as point of use test or point of delivery test, is more appropriate for consideration and application in a subsequent case. Now, they're not talking about a retrial of the Merle and Roy case. They're talking about other cases under similar circumstances in that quote. And the point I want to make is that the Supreme Court has, in subsequent cases, and specifically in what I call the Hub City case, it's the Northwestern Public Service case involving the old Hub City Iron property in Aberdeen, where the REC was granted the right to serve that location under the large load statute in our code, and the customer and Northwestern at a later time concluded that there had been a change in circumstances, and that we had to go back, and they had a retained right to go back and ask that be revisited, and that because of the changed circumstances, reassign it to Northwestern Public Service rather than NEC, which was the rural electric carrier. And the South Dakota Supreme Court said very specifically that there is no such thing as a retained right under South Dakota law. Once a service territory is assigned, it's assigned. That's it. And the only way it can be changed is pursuant to a statute passed by the legislature. And the legislature did not contemplate a situation where there had been a change in circumstances. In other words, once assigned,
the territory is assigned, and it can't change except for some very limited circumstances that apply neither to the Hub City case nor that apply to this case. And the major reason that the courts have assigned for this rule is what they have talked about as being the fundamental reason that the Territorial Integrity Act was passed, and that is that the South Dakota Territorial Integrity Act exists to eliminate duplication and wasteful spending in all segments of the electric utility industry. The court has said that many times, especially in its more recent decisions. Now, if this commission wants to go back and revisit Merle and Roy, what's going to happen is that Sioux Valley is going to have to construct a whole new system of poles and wires and transformers and the rest to deliver the same load that Excel is now delivering, plus some, because of course there's a proposed expansion involved here. And that is why the legislature, in its wisdom, in 1975, passed an act that said once the service area is assigned, it's assigned and that's it. And the Supreme Court in the Hub City case, in the Northwestern Public Service case, said there is no statutory means to change the law by virtue of a retained right to go back and revisit the decision that was made previously. That is the same thing that Sioux Valley is trying to do in this complaint here, because back in the original Merle and Roy case, the commission used the majority load test to determine which utility should serve that situation. Now, Sioux Valley will tell you, no, this isn't a retained right. We think we're going back because of the majority load test, and we think we have a right to recalculate the majority load. Well, isn't that retained right except using another name? I would submit that it is. And that's the whole point of the position that Excel is taking in this case, and that is the Supreme Court clearly said in the Hub City case that there is no basis in statute to make the change that they wanted to do in the Hub City case. We would contend there is no basis in statute to make the change to revisit the assignment of the territory that was made in the original Merle and Roy case. And the only way that can occur is for the legislature to go back and amend the law. And that has not occurred. Now, I also want to point out because there's another reason. These are both new cases, new to the Merle and Roy case. The one I just talked about, the Hub City case, is new, more recent. And then there's the most recent one, and that's the West River Electric case out in Rapid City. And again, the Supreme Court said that a location is a location is a location. Once a location is served, you can't change the utility that provides service to that location. What do we have here? We have a quarry. We had a quarry back in 1992, and we've got a quarry right now. Who is serving it? Excel. You cannot change the service provider and the Supreme Court said in the West River Electric case, you can't change the provider simply because of a change in load, either reduction or increase of the load. Whoever's providing that service will continue to provide that service. Another thing is kind of interesting, and I'm about ready to get to the end, and I apologize for waxing so eloquently here. At least I think it's eloquent. Some may not. But the other thing that's interesting is that way back in the Merle and Roy case, Merle and Roy 1, they talk about the fact that it is the point of connection is viewed by the industry to be the place where the service is established. They said, while the record indicates that it is an industry practice to treat the point of connection as the point of delivery of service. And that's true today. That's the way the industry views it. Well, where is the point of connection in the Merle and Roy case? It's in Excel's territory. And so, for at least three reasons,
not the least of which is that there's no retained right to go back and recalculate all this. We submit that a motion to dismiss should be granted. I want to say one last thing, and that is that SDREA filed a brief that I got about, fortunately, I was at the office at 5:46 last night because that's when it came. But the SDREA says, well, there are fact issues. There isn't a fact issue that affects what I've talked about. We have admitted every allegation in the complaint that's relevant to what I just got done saying. They're saying, well, there's a fact issue as to where the majority load is. We're saying there is no issue about the majority load because the location has already been assigned. We don't have to worry about the majority load. Commissioners, you can consider the majority load to be in Sioux Valley's territory for all I care, because we say it's not relevant. And the same is true under the West River Electric case. Whether the load goes up or down or where it is in the location, it doesn't make any difference, because whoever's serving the location is entitled to continue the location. So whether you view it under the Merlin Roy case, under the Hub City case, or under the West River Electric case, we would submit that the petition should be dismissed. Thank you, and I apologize for going along so long. And I'll be happy to answer any questions when the time comes.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. Now, by my count, there were three parties filing briefs in opposition to the motion to dismiss. Is there a particular order that was agreed upon, Mr. Glover, Ms. Moore?
Well, since I'm the...
Pardon? We'll go Sioux Valley first.
Thank you.
And followed by Merlin Roy, followed by SDREA, followed by staff, if that's amenable to everyone. Wonderful.
Thank you. I'm Al Glover, attorney from Brookings, South Dakota. Represent Sioux Valley Energy. By the way, I represented Sioux Valley Energy when we were up here on the first Merlin Roy's case. And so I'm quite familiar with it. And I think it's interesting to draw some distinctions, so... as a matter of fact, I had quite a finger in the development of the territorial law in the first instance. One of the original drafters. Not that that gives me any greater eloquence when I'm speaking to it, as my opposing counsel would say. But I think that I am familiar with it. And I think that the two instances, of course, that were cited as the major cases by Mr. Gerdes in this case, I referred to one as the Black Hills or the West River case. That was a case where that customer was assigned by virtue of the law as it was drafted. It was part of the original assignment of customers. It was the old thing where he was an existing customer, but it was in the West River's territory. And so what we were arguing about is, as that customer's load and his development expanded, what ultimately did is it just kept going more and more and more into that territory. And that's where we got into the issue of location. And basically it was ruled that once that was assigned under the Territorial Act, that we weren't going to change it. And it gave a very broad definition of location. The one in Aberdeen is an example of the exact same.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of Merlin Roy. We would obviously rely upon our brief for the majority of our issues, but for purposes of elucidating some of the arguments that have already been expressed, I would concur in Mr. Glover's statement that to rely upon the 1997 Hub City case as well as the 2004 West River Electric Cooperative case would make bad law, frankly, because the decisions of those cases are constrained to their facts. And the 1992 case, which involved Merlin Roy's, is also premised upon a very unique set of facts, and a set of facts which since 1992 has never been addressed again by the South Dakota Supreme Court. And I think that it's very well pointed out in the South Dakota Supreme Court's decision, specifically at footnote 6, which is effectively a recitation of the PUC's ruling at the time, which specifically says, under the record as established in this case, the majority of Merlin Roy's electric power is currently consumed in NSP's assigned service area, and therefore NSP has the exclusive right to serve the entire load. At no point was there necessarily a distinction granted that it would be exclusive territory or a redefinition of territory for the future. Therefore, it was essentially contemplated by the South Dakota Supreme Court that this issue could, in fact, be revisited if the facts justified such a revisitation. And they do in this particular instance. And we're not simply talking about the point of connection or being able to move that from one particular side of the dividing line to the other, but we're also talking about a customer, Merlin Roy's, contemplating a very significant increase in the electric load which it will require, almost doubling in size. And because of that, there are numerous factual issues which I appreciate under the standard of review for a motion to dismiss cannot necessarily be reviewed by this commission at that time, but which are certainly relevant to a determination of what the law in fact is. And because of that, a motion to dismiss is premature. Perhaps a motion for summary judgment in the future following discovery or following essentially an opportunity to further develop the facts of this case might be appropriate, but a motion to dismiss for failure to state a cause of action is simply not appropriate under the facts. And when referencing some of the territorial concerns that were effectively dealt with by the Territorial Act of 1975, as well as the subsequent case law and decisions of this commission, there was concern about unnecessary duplication of facilities, the customers being required to absorb revenue shortfalls, those sorts of things. It's my basic understanding that in this case, there would likely be construction required by either Xcel or by Sioux Valley in order to properly serve the entirety of the increased load anticipated by Merlin Roy's. And because of that, you're not dealing with those same types of territorial concerns. You're dealing with two companies which would likely both have to engage in some sort of construction, both engage in some sort of upfront capital expenditure, which certainly would not be imposed upon a customer base by any means. Nor are we talking about the duplication of services because, again, it doesn't appear, at least at this point in time, that either one of the companies would necessarily be in the perfect position to continue to provide power. And so, again, I think that the facts of this case, as applied to the law of the 1992 case, would require that the motion to dismiss at this time be denied, and we would request that the commission deny that motion. Thank you.
Did you ask for my comments?
Sorry, I didn't have the mic on. I was speaking in a mute as well. Ms. Rogers, I presume you're representing SDREA?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you. I feel a little bit like the new kid on the block because I was not involved in any of the past litigation concerning this case, and I'm also the last one to intervene, so I'm probably not as well versed in all of the cases that have been cited so far. I believe that SDREA's position is consistent with Sioux Valley's and also with Merlin Roy's, and that is that, and what we tried to point out in our brief, this motion to dismiss is premature. As Mr. Burtis stated, the law does not contemplate the relief requested by Sioux Valley, and I'm not convinced at this stage that is necessarily a true statement. In fact, I think it's not a true statement. What I did when I looked at these cases and reviewed the West River case and the Hub City cases, I kind of went back and diagrammed the territorial issues in each one. So, for example, in the West River case, you had West River Electric's territory and you had the Black Hills territory. And because of SBCL 4934A42, Black Hills was allowed to continue to provide service to a customer that it had already served that was located in the West River area. And so that was the factual situation and the basis of granting Black Hills' authority to continue to serve that customer was strictly in statute. And in fact, the Supreme Court in West River said a resolution of this case requires statutory construction. So then when the case came back in front of the Supreme Court, when that load expanded, the Supreme Court said, because the initial service and right to serve that customer was based on the statute, that's where you have to look at if you're going to revisit the issue. And they said there is no statute that authorizes changing what was established in the initial statutory 4934A42, which was a territorial act. The same way in Palm City, you have two separate territories, and you have a foundry then that was established in Northwestern Public Service area, but that through customer choice and SDCL 4934A56, which is the large load statute. So it's a statutory right to have an electric service provider outside of Northwestern service areas territory provides service to that customer. And so again, when the customer, the foundry closed, and there was a change in circumstances, the customer wanted to go back to Northwestern Public Service, the court once again looked at the statute. The basis for assigning that customer to that particular area in the first place was a statute. You have to look to the statute to change it. The current case appears to me to be different. What you have is you have two service areas and you have the business in the middle. So it's basically split between two areas. So this commission in the prior litigation looked at the statute, could find no guidance in the statute as to who should be allowed to serve that customer, because in fact there isn't any. So then the commission exercised its discretion as a commission and said, we're going to adopt the majority load. That's not a statutory basis for assigning a service. It's discretionary with this commission. And so now we come to the situation where the facts that govern discretion exercised by the commission at that time may have changed. And in fact, I think that the commission, this commission even contemplated that in the first, when it exercised its position or its discretion in applying the majority load test. In the footnote alluded to by Ms. Moore, the commission went on to say, the commission will not speculate as to how Merle and Roy's load will change in the future and when a majority of the load will be in Sioux Valley's assigned area. So clearly, I think that this commission has the same discretion as they had to assign it in the first place. They utilized their discretion because there was no statutory guideline. Likewise now, if it can be shown that facts and circumstances have changed, I think that this commission retains that discretion to make whatever changes or not make changes that the commission deems appropriate after you have once again reviewed the facts. And I think that's what the Supreme Court upheld in the prior Merle and Roy's cases, and that is your discretion to act and to revisit it. That's why I have, in our brief, we tried to point out that this petition or this motion to dismiss is premature. We believe that you need to look at the facts, and apparently from the petitions to intervene, there may be some dispute in the facts that are out there. But I believe that you as a commission initially need to look at those facts and then make a determination, is there a different discretionary measure that you want to employ now that would be more appropriate to what you see factually in front of you at this point. I think you reserve that right, and that's clear in the Supreme Court cases. So that's why we are urging you to deny the motion to dismiss. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. My plan for the game plan would be to ask staff, allow Mr. Gerdes some rebuttal, and then I'll open up to commissioner and advisor questions, unless there are any concerns with that. Ms. Graff?
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Staff would first like to rely on their comments in their brief as to their position on this matter and echo the eloquent sentiments of Excel. kind of taking these arguments to the extreme by Sioux Valley Energy, Merlin Rise, and SCREA, if the commission were to revisit the majority load test, in essence, they would be allowing Merlin Rise to jump back and forth between providers whenever they wanted to. They could simply move their load across this dividing line in between Xcel and Sioux Valley's territory. And I really don't think that that is what the founders of the 1975 Act would have, I guess, allowed or liked to happen. The Act is clear that it does not want or wants to prevent the duplication of services or services to territories, and that's why they came down with what they came down with. Since then, since the 1992 case, the Supreme Court has provided us guidance as to how to handle this matter. They have came down with the Hub City case and the West River case, giving us definitions as to this retained right that Mr. Gerdes referred to and the definition of location. And that's why it is important to look at those precedents that have been handed down and apply them to the facts of this case today. Xcel has been given the retained right to serve Merlin Rise as it exists at that location. That right should exist with Xcel and should continue to exist with Xcel. And that is why staff feels that the motion to dismiss should be granted and allow Xcel to continue.
Thank you, Ms. Graff. Mr. Gerdes, did you want an opportunity to rebut?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman. I, too, was around with Mr. Glover when this was written, although I was in the back room working on the drafts. My partner, Warren May, was on the front line with the bill. But so, in any event, I couldn't say it any better than Ms. Graff said it. Back in this quote is in most cases on this subject, and this is the Wilrod case back in 1979 when the Supreme Court said an individual has no organic, economic, or political right to service by a particular utility merely because he deems it advantageous to himself. The purpose of the Territorial Act is to assign service territories, and if I'm in Sioux Valley's service territory, that's where the service is. Once the territory is assigned, it's assigned, and there's no way to change it except there are a few statutory ways to change it that are not here relevant. Ms. Graff hit the nail right on the head. If we were to adopt what the position is being advocated by our loyal opposition, Merlin Rise could flip-flop every 5 years and try to negotiate with the other provider. Well, we'll move our load over here now, so you give me a better deal. Well, we'll move our load over here now, so you give me a better deal. That is not what is contemplated by the Territorial Act. What I'm saying and have been saying is this, that Merlin Roy, the first Merlin Roy case, has been overruled by implication by the Supreme Court of South Dakota in these latter two cases that we've been talking about. And that's what the Supreme Court was talking about in the first Merlin Rise said case when they said, we're not going to speculate about what's going to happen if the load switch shifts. They've pronounced the answer, and the answer is we don't go back and revisit the majority load test. The service territory is assigned. I mean, and lastly, Mr. Glover talked about the West River case and how this was different somehow because it was a stranded location. The Supreme Court doesn't say one word about it ever having been a stranded location. They say we're talking about a location, and they use that term expansively. When a location is established, it's established, unless there's some statutory way to change it, and there's no statutory method of changing it that's relevant to this proceeding.
Thank you, Mr. Gerdes. I'd look quickly to the other parties to see if they have anything quickly before moving to commissioner or advisor questions.
I choose in the night. Just cite briefly that one paragraph, one sentence from the initial decision that was cited in by the Supreme Court in Merlin Rise, where they first talked about customer not having the right to choose. And then they said, and this is a quote, a customer with a mobile load may, as a practical matter, choose its electrical provider. If it relocates its equipment to the company's territory of its employees.
Ms. Moore, Ms. Greff, Ms. Rogers, anything further?
I would add one additional brief comment. Mr. Commissioner, it's certainly not the desire of Merlin Royce in this case to jump back and forth between providers, and we would believe that to be a very extreme extension of the argument that has been advanced. However, under the circumstances of this case, with the type of increase in power that will be required in order to properly accommodate the needs of the quarry expansion, we do take on some of the same concerns that are expressed in the large load statute. Obviously, we do not fall within the definition of new customer or new location under the terms of those statutes. However, equitably, we believe that there are concerns which can and need to be addressed in order to ensure that Merlin Roy receives power in a timely manner, in the most effective manner, and to ensure that either carrier can effectively provide the necessary power. And given that there is construction anticipated by both parties, again, it would appear to be premature to dismiss this matter as a matter of law. Thank you.
Ms. Greff, Ms. Rogers, anything further?
Nothing further, thank you.
I guess I would just briefly touch on Ms. Moore's comments as to her concerns under the factors of the large load customers. There do exist other remedies for Merlin Roy's. Do they find that, or if they find that Xcel cannot or has not been providing them, or in the future will not be able to provide them adequate service, the Commission is equipped with adequacy of service statutes that Merlin Roy's would be able to come back to at a later date if they find that their service is not adequate, and then request a switching of providers.
Thank you, Ms. Greff. At this point, we would move to commissioner and advisor questions. I have one for Mr. Glover. Mr. Glover, on page 6 of your brief, you do note that under Xcel's theory of this case, if Merlin Roy's moved their entire load into Sioux Valley's territory, Xcel would still be entitled to continue servicing them. I understand some concerns about that. Do you have any response to concerns raised by staff and by Xcel about what I envision as the teeter-totter ability of a customer to move their load in order to choose their provider on more than one occasion?
I actually would expand that a little bit more. The thing that concerns me is we're not looking at a large load factor here. Let's say you got another customer that wants to build right on a boundary line. He has the ability at that time. If he wants to do it, if he wants to set up the majority load test again, he can effectively put the majority of his load on that very little load, but make it the majority on that side of the customer he wants. If he's under the belief that once I've done it, nobody's ever can change it again. So he can effectively do that by picking it up, moving it right on his line, putting a little bit more, 52% on this side, 48% on this side, and then go on with it. I think that this commission should retain the jurisdiction to rule on that. I don't think that that's going to be a problem with somebody jockeying back and forth. If it does, you've certainly got the inherent power to make exceptions to that. In other words, if you say no, we're not going to let you just five years. If they come back, Merlin Roy comes back and says, well, now we're moving all of our stuff back over to the east side because they got a lot better deal. That might be a point in time where you could say, this is enough of this. This is enough of this. We're not going to entertain this. We're not going to permit you to do that back and forth. But you have to weigh that against the criteria that's happening if you follow the argument of counsel. In this particular case, they've essentially got, we have territory that is not our territory. Basically, it was assigned to us. And it could be that he'll have 100% of his customer in our territory. That's fine if we agreed to that, but we never agreed to it.
Mr. Glover, your comments seem to place quite a bit of importance on customer preference. But the and I may be wrong on that, please correct me, but the statute allows so few exceptions for customer preference.
And I agree with that. I have heard that. If I'm leaving that impression with you, I don't want to, because I fully understand that the purpose of our territorial law and the rulings of this commission and our Supreme Court over the years have essentially said customer preference has no place in our territorial laws. And I agree with that. I think that is a broad and accurate statement. And I don't think we want to kind of get into the position where we're permitting a customer to choose.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. You know in your brief, on page 4, the court, and you quote from the court ruling that a customer with a mobile load may, as a practical matter, choose its electric provider as it relocates its equipment to the company's territory of its choice. And you've mentioned that a couple of times today to support the idea of the majority load, that if the circumstances change, that if the customer moves their load into somebody else's service territory, that they can, in effect, that the commission, in effect, can select a different provider. But my reading of this, I presume the court was very clearly talking about a customer moving their load to a new location. Do you think I'm reading that portion of the ruling incorrectly?
If you were to take out the word mobile load, that might be true. But I think if you give any meaning to the word a customer with a mobile load, I think then you're talking about a situation where they're talking about a customer that's got a load that he can move, which is essentially a mobile load. It's not a structure, so to speak. That's what I'm referring to in that case. And there's very unique circumstances in this case. So it's not the general rule. It's one exception.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Other commissioner or advisor questions? Commissioner Hanson.
Thank you. Mr. Gerdes, just a couple of curiosity points. You used a date on the stated that the legislature passed a law stating that once a territory is assigned, it remains assigned. Was that 1975?
Yes, that was the year that the Territorial Act was adopted.
And I have another question for you, and forgive me, I'm not going to be able to articulate it very well because I was listening to other things as I was jotting just a couple words to remind myself of it. And while you're looking for it, I may ask some other questions. You stated that in the South Dakota Territorial Integrity Act that the Supreme Court had made a statement pertaining to the inability, the sanctity, I guess I will say, of that act. And do you recall it was towards the beginning of your remarks? Do you recall what you had said on that? While you're looking for that, I'm going to ask a couple other questions. I hope they don't doesn't cause you consternation if you're trying to look for that. Ms. Moore, just a point of clarification for me. As I understand it, these properties are all contiguous. Is that correct?
Yes, we haven't added on any property. This is all property we've already had.
Could you state your name for the record?
Sure. My name is Patty Nora, and I'm with Merlin Royce Paving. We have not added on any more property. This is all still the same property that we had. We have new equipment that's going further south.
Okay. The name one more time?
Patty Nora, N-O-H-R.
Great. Thanks, Nora. Patty, appreciate it.
Excuse me, I wanted to defer to Ms. Nora as a representative to ensure I didn't make an actual misstatement.
That's great. We appreciate that. Thank you. And one other question for you. Is this in any way a mobile load?
To a certain extent, yes. However, this is a multi-million-dollar expansion and requires significant amounts of new materials, which is in and of itself extremely expensive, and which will be placed in the appropriate place once the final plans are drawn up. And it is my understanding, based on speaking with Ms. Knorr as well as other representatives of Merlin Royce, that because of some delays in construction at this point, that it has not yet been determined exactly where all of this equipment is going to go in order to best serve the area of the quarry in which they're currently working. So it is, to a certain extent, a mobile load. However, because it is that multi-million-dollar expansion, it certainly doesn't make any economic sense for Merlin Royce to constantly juggle the location of this type of very burdensome, heavy, expensive equipment.
So for the most part, once it is placed, it is likely to remain at that location, with the exception, I'm going to guess, that as the quarry expands or changes, there may be a relocation of that equipment?
I believe that would be a fair statement, yes.
In the future, when there is a relocation of that equipment, is there a potential for it to end up back into Sioux Valley's territory?
Quite frankly, I would defer to Ms. Knorr on that because, again, she would better be able to describe the nature of the quarrying endeavors they undertake.
Some of the new equipment is going to the south in the property, and there's going to be new equipment on the north side, too, so it's still quite hasn't been determined yet. Not everything is, you know, is moving out of XL's property, but not, so there's still going to be some straddling across that line, I guess, and it's not really been determined how much is going to be where.
Thank you. And just for the record, as I had recalled, you're the president of the company. Is that correct? Or what is your position?
I'm one of the owners, and my sister is the president.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Burtis, would you like to respond to Commissioner Hansen's question?
Yes. What I was referring to, Commissioner Hansen, was the South Dakota Supreme Court has, on numerous occasions, when it's been deciding territorial issues, has a quote, and that is that the purpose of the South Dakota Territorial Integrity Act was to eliminate duplication and wasteful spending in all segments of the electric utility industry, and the cases pretty much support the proposition that that is the guiding light that should be used in interpreting these statutes. In other words, the purpose of assigning service territories was to eliminate duplication of services by competing utilities on both sides of the dividing line, so to speak. So, and that's the point we were trying to make here, is that you could end up with a flip-flop situation where both companies are duplicating equipment, and that's not what's contemplated by the Act. And that was our point.
Well, I appreciated that, and I thought I had seen it in a brief. I wasn't certain whether I had or not. I think it was in your brief, and I
wouldn't be surprised if it's in my brief.
Okay. And it seems to explain, at least as surprisingly, the Supreme Court can say things better than I can. But I was struggling with this, and as I struggle with it, I really truly wanted to maintain the integrity of territories as much as possible. And at the same time, we have this situation where at one time it was on one side of the fence and now it's on the other side of the fence, and there's discussion about it going back to the other side of the fence. It's a struggle for me because I wish to maintain it as much as possible. I don't want to get into a conclusive statement here, but I think that helped me with the best that I could articulate my thoughts. And there is some concern, Mr. Gerdes, what if 100% of the load eventually migrated over to the Sioux Valley service territory?
If 100% of the load migrated over to Sioux Valley service territory, XTEL would still be able to serve that load under the West River case, because the West River case talks about a location, and once a location is established, and that's a perfect example. That is the West River case involves a sewage treatment plant that is totally in West River's service area, but Black Hills Power serves it, and it's because of the fact that it was originally served. And, I mean, there are all kinds of exceptions. We try to eliminate them, but there are all kinds of exceptions. As an example, I know there's a a school building in the southern part of Sioux Falls, where just one corner of it is in Xcel's territory and the rest of it's in the local cooperative's territory, but Xcel has the service because it's got the point of connection. I mean, so there's all kinds of examples of that, but there has to be some consistency, and that's why we're saying once the location is established, and that's why we're saying that's what West River said, once the location is established, it is a location, and unfortunately, our legislature in its wisdom did not provide a statutory mechanism for changing that.
Thank you. And I don't know that Commissioner Johnson needs me to come running to his defense in any fashion whatsoever. He's quite capable by himself. But knowing Merlin Royce as long as I have and having done business with him even years, many years ago, I recognize fully well, Ms. Moore, that they would not play the game of jumping back and forth just to try and game the system. At the same time, I think that Commissioner Johnson's statements were more towards the precedent that this would set as opposed to meaning to imply in any fashion that Merlin Royce would do that. Sure. Thank you, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, sir, any questions or comments from you?
I have no questions or comments at this point.
Advisors?
I have one, and maybe you can all address this. I regret to say I picked up the wrong Northern States Power case as I was scrambling to get ready. I've got one that has no relevance to this in my folder here. I recall, though, in doing the brief in the West River case, a statement in the opinion to the effect of nothing in the Act giving a customer or the right to be served by two utilities.
That's correct.
And maybe, could you guys maybe address whether that, I couldn't quite discern the logic of that, really, when I read the original case, but maybe address that and how that might relate to the issue of stranding if we were to do what the complainants are requesting us to do.
The quote is on page 5 of the version of the Act that I have, and it's under subheading 2, called, it's subheading 2, Exclusive Service, and it's paragraph 8 in the numbered opinion, and it says, there is no statutory provision which would allow both NSP and Sioux Valley to service the company. Thus, PUC applied the majority load test to determine whether NSP or Sioux Valley should serve the company's electrical needs. Sioux Valley argues PUC has no statutory authority which would allow it to adopt the majority load test. At that time, the commission adopted the majority load test as a way of assigning the territory. And they assigned the territory, and now it's assigned. And that's the way I read this. There's nothing in this decision or any other decision that says you can go back and rework the majority load test every time a load moves around. And I guess that's the point I'm trying to make.
Well, and what about service by two utilities? Is that
It says there's no statutory provision which would permit both to serve.
Let me ask you this. It says there's no statutory provision which would require that.
It says allow.
Allow.
Right.
Okay.
And there isn't. There isn't any statutory provision that permits two companies to serve the same location that I'm aware of in the Territorial Act.
And I certainly, I believe I understand the implication, you know, with the discussion on the duplication of services and all of that. But is it then the position of Xcel that if the commission were, because of the load, the majority of the load passing to the south end of the property, would assign it now to Sioux Valley, that there would be a stranding or that we would result in a wasting and then duplication of investment out there?
Well, yes. Because what you would end up doing was any service that and any improvements that NSP or Xcel has would be have to be abandoned. They would be useless, and of course then Sioux Valley would have to build new equipment to serve the load. And so that's exactly what the territorial law is talking about, avoiding. And I mean, there's no stranding in the sense of stranding a company because, again, that's answered in the West River case, which talks about a location. And once a location is established, it's always a location.
Well, will your facilities be stranded if Merle and Roy's is to be served by Sioux Valley?
Yes.
I'm not arguing that this is a grandfathering issue here, but what I'm asking is if this is a genuine issue, if this is a genuine case where that phrase duplication of facilities and waste is that issue.
And I
think it is, and the reason is because your facilities out there then would be stranded.
Yes. They'd become useless.
Is that an issue of fact in this case, or is it absolute?
I don't think it's an issue of fact as it relates to the law, and I think that's why we brought the motion to dismiss, because the facts are irrelevant, whether or not it's stranded or not, because of the operation of the two cases, the Hub City case and the West River case. I mean, the law says that once a location is established, it's a location. And that location was established in the first Merle and Roy case. And that's the point we're making. There's no point to go any further.
Other questions from commission advisors? Or Mr. Glover, did you want to respond to?
Just one point. I think that the point is well made. John makes it, is that the commissioners have already asked some issues about factual issues that may very well be relevant for this to go further. But if we restrict this strictly, given the assumptions, the only issue we're talking about here is what issue he's raising in his motion, and that is simply, do you have the power to change a customer under any circumstance, inherent power to do it? We know two of them you don't, and that one location in the Rapid City case, and the other one in the Hub City case, but we've argued, and I think it's there, that you do have. When you argue the duplication of services, I only wanted to remind you that if the companies couldn't agree under the statute, if the companies could not agree upon the territory back in 1975, then it was up to the Public Utilities Commission to assign the territory in a contested case situation. Duplication of facilities was only one of the criteria, statutory criteria, that they had to when they make that decision. It was one of I think there was five or six criteria that the commission could use in deciding who should get a customer. And duplication of service was only one of them. It is not the only criteria to be considered by the commission.
Thank you, Mr. Glover. Other commission advisor questions? Commissioner questions?
I might.
Yeah, Mr. Smith, go ahead.
One more. And Meredith, I regret to say I couldn't find your petition to intervene here. I think it's probably stuck in one of my other files, frankly. Are you in your... I can't remember whether you did or didn't and whether that's relevant here. Is Merle and Roy's alleging that XL either is not now or cannot or will not in the future provide adequate service?
I don't believe that allegation has been made. The primary justification advanced in the petition to intervene was based on ensuring that service would be provided in a timely manner and that either party would essentially be able to accommodate the increased load that is anticipated will be required to service the quarry expansion. So in that regard, it wasn't certainly the desire of Merle and Royce to become the object of desire, so to speak, between two companies, but to ensure that in that fight, it would be allowed the opportunity to advance any facts or any circumstances which it believed needed to be addressed in order to best flesh out the arguments and in order to ensure that it was able to obtain the power it needs.
I have one other question, if I may. It may be irrelevant in the wake of the West River case, probably is, but Are the facilities here discrete loads, or are they all an integrated load that would be serviced through one transformer in one set of facilities? Or do you know that? Has that design level been done?
I don't believe I know the answer to that question at this point.
And I don't. John, I might also mention, only you talk about stranded load. I go back to the original Merle and Royce. There was stranded load back there, too. Sioux Valley's load, once Excel was permitted to connect it, all of our loads to that site were stranded in.
We're not aware of the nature of the load. We have one transformer and one feeder, and we don't know how it's broken down.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Question for Ms. Greff and staff, and Mr. Gerdes may want to chime in as well, but Mr. Glover and I have had some discussions about what the court meant when it talked about a customer with a mobile load being able to choose its electric provider. Do you have any comment on the way I view that as opposed to the way Mr. Glover has laid out his case?
If I remember correctly, that was in the original Merle and Roy's case in 1992 where they talked about the mobile load and it being able to be switched back and forth. Since then, since 1992, we have gotten two other cases come down, the Hub City case and the Black Hills case, that have further given us direction as to how to view this mobile load. One is in the retained right case, in the Hub City case, where the retained right exists with the current provider, and also the word location. Once a location is established in the Black Hills case, once a location is established, that location is its location, is its location. It can't be switched back and forth. So yes, there was this mobile load back in 1992 and in the first Merle and Roy's case, but since then the court has directed us that once this is established and once a customer is being served by a utility, a customer cannot. There is no mechanism for a customer to jump back and forth between providers. I guess that's how staff would feel about it.
Thank you, Ms. Graff. Mr.
And I would add, I read in context, I read this quote as saying this was the problem that the PUC and the court were trying to solve. They're not saying you can do this. They're saying this is the situation that we were faced with.
I see. All right. Unless there are any other commissioner or advisor questions, it seems as though there are three options for the commissioner to take at this point. One would be to rule at this point from the bench. One would be to take a short recess for the purposes of deliberating and returning today to make a ruling. And the third would be to take this information under advisement and take no action today. I'll look to Commissioner Hansen and Chairman Saar as to your preferences. I'm prepared to do any of the three.
I'm prepared to make a ruling today. If you feel a need to have a short conference, that's fine, too.
Mr. Chairman, we could certainly catch you in via phone in a private conference if you're so inclined.
Well, I'm certainly prepared to act as well today, so and certainly I can do so with or without the conference. So whatever my fellow commissioners would like to do, I'm more than happy to accommodate that.
I haven't heard any need for a recess and deliberation, unless I'm reading either of you wrong. If no one wants a deliberation, then I think a commission action is in order. Does anyone have a motion?
I will move that the commission grant the motion to dismiss.
And I would second that.
And I dissent.
Okay. The motion by a 2-1 vote is the motion to dismiss has been granted. I believe that concludes the Commission's actions today, although there are a few announcements. The next regularly scheduled Commission meeting will be held July 11, 2006 at 9:30 a.m. in Room 412, the State Capitol Building. Commission meetings are scheduled both for August 8th and August 22nd. Pre-hearing motions of the Big Stone 2 docket will not be heard after today's commission meeting. At 10 a.m. on June 11th, commissioners and staff will be meeting with representatives of MidAmerican Energy. We did that this morning at the Lewis and Clark Rural Water Boardroom. A wind energy meeting will be held this evening at the EMS building in Gary. Commissioners and staff will be attending the Mid-American Regulatory Conference in Columbus, Ohio, June 17th to the 21st. And finally, a hearing in docket EL05-022 in the matter of Big Stone 2 will be held in the State Capitol Building June 26th through the 30th. And the hearing will start at 9:30 a.m. on June 26th in room 412. That concludes the business for the commission today. Thank you very much.